welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body.
Over the past several episodes, we've been exploring creativity, not just as the expression of talent, but also as a human process. We've talked with neuroscientists, clinicians, vocal coaches, neurofeedback researchers, neurotechnologists, and people who examine what the internal process is for people who create. And again, people describe creativity as a shift in state, a change in attention, a change in emotional intensity, a change in connection, a change in the nervous system itself. People talked about flow, about absorption, about resonance, about losing track of time, about emotional overload, about flexibility, about exhaustion, about vulnerability. And they described creativity less as something a person possesses, and more as a state a person enters. So before we move into the next phase of the series, conversations with artists, performers, and other creatives about their lived experiences, along with the teachers and clinicians who work with them, I wanted to pause and pull some of these threads together. This episode is about what many of our guests called, in one way or another, the creative state.
One of the first things that struck me in these conversations was how often people described creativity as an altered state of consciousness. Not metaphorically, literally. Psychologist and researcher Dr. Mari Swingle described what many artists experience as a kind of fugue state.
And you're working on it, and at a certain point, the world just disappears, and you are one with your art. There's complete loss of notion of time, hunger, thirst, nothing is there. And that can last, you know, anywhere from a half an hour to hours upon hours upon hours. Now, I'm not saying people don't go to the washroom or have a glass of water, but it's just, you're at a different level of consciousness. And the way you know you've been in this state is frequently the day after or a week after, you go and look at what you've done. So if you've been up painting for 3 hours or 9 hours or whatever it is, and you crawl into bed and you wake up the next morning, you go, wow, did I do that? The same thing with writing. It tends to be a little bit more distal, like 3 weeks later or a year later, you read your book and it's like, wow, did I write that? And I kind of call that the muse. You're possessed in a most positive way by this other state, and it's just absolute flow.
That description came up repeatedly. The disappearance of time. The feeling that the work is somehow flowing through you instead of being consciously assembled piece by piece. Voice coach, therapist, and performer Danielle Pinals describes something very similar.
As long as like my heart and soul is in it, there's just this kind of wavelength that I feel like I'm on, like in a state of flow. And to me, that feels like the most fulfilling kind of like moment to be in, is that state.
What fascinated me listening back to these conversations was how similar the language became, even among people from very different disciplines. Some spoke about alpha rhythms, some about emotional salience, some about embodiment, some about attention networks, but underneath the vocabulary was the same core observation. Creative work often involves a shift away from ordinary self-monitoring, often in unplanned ways. Neuroscientist Dr. Simone Lucchini described musical improvisation less as executing a plan and more as entering a dynamic exchange with other musicians in real time.
Is that improvisation is undeniably a form of creativity, and it requires you, because it requires you to create in the moment. So we could go back and forth, and we could argue about the extent to which interpretation of a pre-written piece is also creative, but I think improvisation does give more like solid grounds for like the presence of creativity there.
Not a loss of awareness exactly, but a different organization of awareness. Mary Swingle connected this directly to visualization and pattern recognition.
When you close your eyes, do you see pictures, right? When you read a book, do you get a movie going in your head? So that tends to be the occipital, a very, very efficient occipital alpha. The other, the low high alpha in the frontal regions, that's pattern recognition. Okay, or the ability to manipulate patterns. And I find when you have those two things going, the high, I guess, projective visualization and the ability to manipulate and organize patterns, I find those two are very, very dominant and highly creative people.
The creative state isn't passive. It is intensely active. But it is active in a way that's different from our general state. The creative state is less controlled, more associative, more immersive, and often profoundly embodied. Another recurring theme was that creativity doesn't happen only in the mind. It happens in the body, in relationships, in emotional systems, in psychophysiological patterns of safety and threat. Danielle Pinels talked about what happens when expression itself stops feeling safe.
Their nervous system, it's like a safety mechanism. When it doesn't feel safe to express who you truly are authentically with other people. So in that case, it's being able to find your authentic voice underneath all of it and being able to share that with people who are safe and confident enough to share that with people who are safe. Sometimes that's the more kind of withdrawn, maybe usually an avoidant attachment style that comes with that, versus maybe a more like if I'm thinking of an anxiously attached person and they've experienced a trauma and they need to maybe, they almost feel like they need to over explain themselves. And there's like this almost like hyper arousal that happens.
That idea that creativity depends partly on a nervous system in a state that allows expression came up over and over. Danielle described singing not simply as sound production, but as a whole body experience of resonance.
And I can feel the resonance going up and down my body when I make that sound.
The neuroscientist Penny Jean Gracefire approached this from a different angle. She described creativity as a form of world building.
So creativity for me is always about world building and it's always about connection and communication. And that's like just the foundation of anything else I'm going to say today.
That phrase, world building, really strikes me. It applies to every creative pursuit. Art, performance, music, therapy, engineering, relationships, identity. Creativity in many ways involves building internal models of ourselves, other people, and possibility. Penny Jean also described creativity as deeply connected to sensitivity, to how permeable we are to the world around us.
There's the insensitive and overly sensitive. We see both of those categories in people who are quite creative.
One of the tensions underlying this entire series is that the same sensitivity that fuels creativity can also overwhelm the system. And that means the creative state depends partly on the ability to move, between engagement and disengagement, between immersion and distance, between openness and stability. MIT researcher Kamea Lakmwasam described music almost as a guided emotional transition.
And what we've found in pilot studies is that taking people along a musical arc, so meeting them where they are, helping them find emotion that maps to the specific state that they're feeling, and then having them navigate through an experience to a state where they would like to be ideally, helps people reduce feelings of short-term stress.
That emotional exchange becomes especially visible in performance. Because performers are not only regulating themselves internally, they're also constantly responding to audiences, environments, and other people in real time. Dr. Barbara Minton describes that dynamic when working with another artist.
There is a certain synergy when you're composing with someone, and that sort of sync up thing that happens. And when you think about composing with a musician or two musicians working together, you have, if you have very strong entrainment, it changes everything. You know, when you're playing with somebody and you feel that connection, it's so, it feels so deep. There's really nothing like it.
This is how Penny Jean Gracefire refers to herself and her work.
But sometimes people say, what do you do? And I have a couple of standard jokes. I say, oh, I'm a neural frequency analyst. Or I'll say, oh, I'm a frequency barista.
Which may actually be one of the better descriptions of creativity in this entire series. As a behavioral health clinician, I'm of course interested in disruptions. If creativity relies on flexibility, resonance, immersion, and emotional access, what happens when something goes wrong? What fractures the state? Several guests pointed toward the same answer. Overload. Too much input, too much stress, too little recovery. Penny Jean Gracefire put it very bluntly.
I think the biggest creativity killer is exhaustion. Like being under-resourced, it's just exhaustion and stress. And I'm even just framing stress as all the things happening that are essentially we have to expend resources on to just survive.
Dr. Mari Swingle described something similar from the perspective of technology and attention. Dr. Rex Jung talked about the importance of downtime for the creative process away from everyday technology.
You need blank space to create. You need some boredom to create.
Some of the advice also is to, that I've found to be helpful is to find that downtime that is important to allow your mind to wander, to play with those ideas in a way that allows them to collide together in ways that they otherwise would not. Having that time that you can reliably allow that default mode to sing, if you will, is important, and becoming comfortable with that. In this age of iPhones and everything and email and all of the distractors, I think it's important to try to get away from that and find some time away from the distractions.
You need some boredom to create. Not because boredom itself is creative, but because creativity seems to require a condition of empty space, silence, pause, reflection, wandering attention. And many of us now live in environments specifically designed to eliminate those conditions. Mari described modern technology as creating endless input without enough room for output.
First of all, if you're all you're getting is input, 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 and there's no space for output, okay, it's as basic as that.
What struck me listening back to this section was that almost every guest, in one form or another, described creativity as requiring permeability, but not constant bombardment. The nervous system has to be open enough to absorb experience, but also stable enough to organize it. And exhausted systems rarely create well. Another theme also emerged repeatedly in these conversations. Creativity may need open space, but it isn't always calm. Sometimes the same systems that fuel creativity can also become destabilized. Neurologist and author Dr. Alice Flaherty describes the hypergraphia which drove her to write compulsively, struggling to separate the creative process from the pathological.
If the brain can cause hypergraphia, maybe writer's block is related. And I was like, I should write a book about that. And I had not really been interested in writing for other people until then. And I think part of the reason was that when you're mentally ill, you know, I was thinking I was going to lose my job, end up in a trailer park. And I was very anxious that people would see me as worth something. So if I could turn my symptom, which was this compulsive writing, into something that could get published, then poof, I go from mentally ill to author in, you know, 30 seconds. I think a lot of the studies of creativity that show that creativity is good for you and it makes you healthier and happier and stuff, that's all looking at like normal people creativity when, you know, we do something in the shop and we're pleased with ourselves. a lot of the people that are super creative, it's not necessarily healthy from any point of view except their publisher or, you know, the people that are marketing their products.
One of the most interesting things about the series was that it never fully resolved a central tension. Does creativity come from disruption or from regulation? From instability or from flexibility? The answer, I suspect, is that creativity often lies somewhere in the tension between. Too much rigidity and nothing new emerges. Too much chaos and nothing coheres. The creative state may depend on a nervous system that can move fluidly between those poles. Penny Jean Gracefier described this as the ability to stay in mismatch.
Instead of, oh, that's distressing and in need of correction, then your own creative capacity will expand.
That may be one of the most important ideas from this entire series, because creativity, by definition, requires tolerating uncertainty, not knowing, experimentation, revision, the possibility that our existing models are incomplete. Even the conversations about artificial intelligence kept returning to this point. Kamea Lakamwasam framed it very simply.
I think humans are creative. And I think that the data that we train these models on is creative data made by creative humans. I think that we can be creative with AI. We can enable human creativity through AI tools if we do it responsibly and if we do it well.
After all these conversations, I'm less convinced that creativity is a rare trait possessed by a gifted few. I'm more convinced that it reflects a set of nervous system conditions. Flexibility, attention, emotional access, safety, sensitivity, curiosity. Enough structure to organize experience, enough openness to transform it. The creative state may be what happens when the nervous system becomes flexible enough to connect ideas, emotions, memories, and sensations in new ways. And maybe that's why creativity matters so much. Not only because it produces art, but because it reveals something fundamental about being human. One thing I've realized making this series is that creativity looks very different from the inside than it does from the outside. From the outside, we often see performance, talent, output, finished work. But underneath that are nervous systems that are constantly negotiating uncertainty, emotion, attention, connection, and identity. And that's where we're headed next. In the next episodes, we're going to shift from the neuroscience of creativity more directly to the lived experiences of creative people themselves. And we'll ask them what creativity is like from the inside. So thanks for joining us. And I look forward to continuing this journey together.
Thanks for joining us on Healthy Brain, Happy Body. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link in the show notes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get the podcast. Reviews help us reach more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.